everyone, and welcome to the Talent Game podcast. I'm your host, Joe Burridge, and with me today is Charlie Ruck, Head of Games at TrueSearch. Welcome to the podcast, Charlie.
Thanks for having me, Joe. Absolute pleasure.
Yeah. And I feel like this has been a bit of a long time coming. So I'm really, really happy to have you on here. But for our listeners who have no idea who you are, please go ahead and introduce yourself.
So, hi, everyone. So I'm Charlie Ruck. I'm the Head of Games at True. I've been in this wonderful world of executive search now for coming up to 8 or so years. We're just over 8 years, in fact. I am based out in London, but actually have a global role. Recruit right the way across the world. Probably 40% of my time spent in the US, 40% of my time in Europe, and then a small chunk of my time recruiting across the APAC region. I've been the head of games at True now for around about 2 years or so. And True has a wonderful history of games. Actually, former colleagues of mine that started out the games practice, and I took that over when they departed. But for me, games is a passion. I grew up as a gamer. Always been a huge part of who I am, and probably defines, you know, what I am today. And I suppose feel very lucky to be able to wake up every morning and marry what I'm passionate about with what I do for a living. So that makes my day so much more fun and exciting. And to get to work with, you know, the movers and shakers, I should say, of the industry over the years, and help define their teams, and help, you know, play a small part, but I believe a really integral part in their success, is really, really fun and rewarding.
Yeah, I love that answer. And I also, just talking about passion for games, this is an audio podcast, but I can see you in your secret lab chair in your Hobbit Hole inspired converted house. Yeah, I love it. But likewise, it's what the games industry is great for. You bring what you love to do in your spare time into your work. And on that note, what are you playing at the moment?
I have a little bit of a one-trick pony in games. It's quite sad, really. I've been a WoW player for over, well, 20 years. It's 20 years this year, of course, that the game was released. And back in my early years, when I had way more time to play video games and was much larger than I am today, not in height, but in width, I used to compete in WoW esports. Nowadays, of course, I don't have the time to do that at all, sadly. But I still occasionally log in. And of course, they've just released some new classic servers, so I've been having a little bit of fun with that over the weekend and in my very little spare time. But I am also a deep lover of Supercell games, and I do, as much as I can, try to log into Clash and whenever I can. I still play WoW as much as I can, but time and growing up is a big challenge for these sorts of things.
I have to admit, I didn't grow up as a PC gamer, so I've never played World of Warcraft, even though I've watched so much gameplay of it and have so many friends who played it. Like, for example, the D&D group I run at Play Ventures here, I'm the dungeon master for that, and like Anton, one of our investors, and Jake, who's like leads M&A here, they've been the same amount of time, been playing WoW for all all that time, and they update me on all of the shenanigans that are going on in that world right now. I'm like, okay, I love it.
Yeah, so. It's I think we describe ourselves nowadays as washed up old gamers, a lot of us WoW players, seeing as we've been playing the same game for 20 years, but somehow it just becomes such a massive part of your life that you can never really let it go, even when you try sometimes. So
I love that, though, when it's like, you know, it transcends from being just a game that you're trying to win at to very much being, you create social connections and you're in a world and all of the lore and everything else. And especially, I don't know if you've ever been to BlizzCon, but that always just looks like the mecca for WoW fan. Have you made it out there before?
Sadly, never made it to BlizzCon, although last year I was out at GDC, and then the week after I spent the week in LA. And I finally got to go to the Blizzard campus in Irvine and get my picture with the orc out the front and see all the, you know, see all the these incredible statues that they have around the campus and just actually, you know, see where the magic is made. It's like lifting the curtain behind something that you've, that's always been, you know, something you've admired for 20 years was really quite an amazing experience. And I completely agree with your point around the social connections piece. I mean, I've got friends I've had, you know, made for life through that platform. And I think one of the amazing things about games generally is that for those that are, you know, that socialize in different ways and build connections with individuals in different ways, these virtual worlds create a platform for people to do that and for people to build lasting connections. That I give a shout out to the new Netflix documentary on The Remarkable Life of Ibelin that just came out, which is a great example of that. A poor young lad in Norway that had a debilitating disease, and he played WoW, and it was his means of building relationships with people. He, you know, in the physical world, he found that much more challenging due to his condition. It's a really amazing story, and I mean, granted, I can't relate to that personally because I'm lucky and fortunate to be healthy and so on. But it certainly kept me sane during COVID, and now I've made amazing friends for life that I would never have met had it not been for being locked inside by an annoying virus for. For a good few months, but I take those friends with me now, and I've been fortunate enough to meet a few in real life as well nowadays. So it's pretty.
That's cool, and actually, that Netflix documentary is very much on my watch list. I've had you're not the first person now who's recommended it to me, so need to get the. It sounds like an emotional roller coaster, but I'm ready to dive into that soon. So
tissue ready.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. I didn't know that. But hey, we've been talking about like your passion for games. So you say at least 20 years, probably a lot longer before that. But how did you get into the games industry? I guess we know the why you're in the games industry. But how did that all come about?
Yeah. Really, really circumstantial, I would say, actually. So, My previous life as a headhunter was in the finance world. So the first 5.5 or so years, I was hiring CFOs across the European tech ecosystem. Yeah, worked on amazing searches. The biggest one we've ever done probably in Europe was the script CFO of Spotify, which is obviously a really amazing one for us. And Tru has this amazing history in essentially a practice which is called GEMS, which stands for Gaming, Entertainment, Media, and Sports. And the sort of thesis behind that practice is looking at the creative industries as a whole and having professionals that understand each of those four respective industries really from an inch wide, mile deep perspective, and then looking at how we can enable those industries to intersect and overlap, and of course, therefore, move talent between those industries. And of course, when I joined Tru and realized this was a practice at the firm, having been hired into the finance practice, I just thought, I've got to get this. You know, this has got my name all over. This is sort of exactly where I can channel my energy and my passion. Of course, not to downplay finance. I love doing finance work, but you know, when you get a little bit of a personal connection to something, it makes it so much more fun and engaging. And so, very, very quickly, I sort of slotted myself into that team and just sort of, it's gone from there, really. And that's a few years ago now, and now I spend 90% of my time in the games industry and never look back. It's been a challenging few years. It's not understate how difficult it's been for us, for the folks that are actually working on the front lines, but the impact and the outcome that you feel when you do great work in this industry and the friends you make along the way is what it's all about, as far as I'm concerned.
So before we go further into the discussion, I think it's worth just defining what you mean by executive search firm, because there might be people listening who understand the concept of a recruitment agency. They get paid to find people, but how does that really change when it gets into the executive side, and how would you define it?
It's a big question, Joe. It's a big topic. I think there's a few sort of core things, and some of them are sort of business model focused. You know, we are paid up front for the work that we do, which is a big shift for businesses to often understand when they're often, or more, most of the time, used to you know, paying recruiters based on success and finding a candidate. You know, we are tasked with going out to market and finding the world's best leaders. You know, I work at the board C-level and VP level, and in some cases senior director as well, depending, of course, on the scale of the business. And so these are the, you know, pardon the pun, but, you know, the game-changing hires in the businesses, and therefore, you know, there's an expectation on us, on the industry, and me, to invest huge amounts of time and resource into making sure that we are doing everything we possibly can to identify the world's best talent for our respective clients. And so what goes into that is not only a huge amount of research, but also the huge amount of enablement of our platform. So these are things like our technology platform, which is custom built by our firm to enable the success of the projects that we work on. So we're capturing huge amounts of data, comp data, assessment data on talent. We have our own psychometrics platform, which not only assesses leaders and their psychometric profile and their communication style, but it also maps, it's more like a heat map actually, to the respective teams that they will be working in. And so we think about how we can plug communication gaps and skills gaps into respective leadership teams. And as gamers, we all know that often we're not the best at communication. We're not the best at setting strict KPIs on businesses. We're often much more creatively leaning. And so finding leaders that can balance that and help businesses meet deadlines and help businesses meet shareholder needs is so integral to the success and raising further capital. And, you name it, the list can go on forever. And that's the part that we play in helping to enable these businesses and fundamentally these hires to succeed and have a lasting impact on the businesses. I'm sure there's loads more I could say on that. So if there's any other questions, let me know. But that's a quick nutshell on some of the differences.
Yeah, it's great. So what I was thinking is that because businesses are making such a sizable investment in one individual, in your case, like over and over again, because of the seniority and the breadth of the business impact. Yeah, they need an incredibly deep assessment. Like, what do these assessments usually look like at a high level? And like, how long would it usually take? Let's use your example of a CFO. Like, how long would that process take a company typically?
I mean, I think industry average, I think time to close is something like 120 days for a search from signature in terms of starting the search to the candidate then signing the contract and agreeing to join the business.
I think that's a lot faster than I was expecting, if I'm honest.
I think that's the industry average, and it's around that. And I think our average is somewhere around 108 or 109 days. So we're slightly quicker than industry average. And I mean, that's largely sort of testament to how tech focused we are and how tech enabled we are. And actually, we just work pretty pacey and work pretty fast generally. You know, it's part of our culture, really, is to be more flexible and maybe a little bit more dynamic than some of the more traditional firms out there, let's say. But to your point around assessment, I think what is so important for us in the games practice is that, we love and care about this industry, and we build better relationships. We build, we build friendships with our clients. We build friendships with our candidates because we all share this same passion and love for the industry. And I think that also means that because we build a higher degree of trust, we therefore can also really get under the skin of what people care about. And that's not just in terms of their careers, but it's their motivations. It's what they, how they characterize themselves to leaders, what they believe their key success factors are. And it's also really, you know, not just for the candidate, but it's also really getting under the skin of what matters to the client. So many times a client will say to you sort of what they believe they want, and actually you disagree, and then you have to spend quite a bit of time really unpicking that and helping to consult and guide them on what the market looks like, how much things cost, and just all the little nuances that you know, predetermine the success of that hire. Because sometimes I think if you don't have the confidence to say no to things and actually disagree with your clients, you then set yourself up for you know, what a really, really long and arduous process, but also a hire that's much less likely to work out fundamentally. So, but then more operationally, of course, you know, assessment is at least an hour with each, you know, candidate that's going, we think we're going to put in front of the client to really understand, you know, the brief fundamentally. What does the client want? How does that match with the candidate? You know, that sounds more basic, of course, but I would always really boil it down to the most important thing is that relationship building you have with the candidate, because then you really get under the weeds of not just their skill set and their suitability, but also, are they genuinely going to take this job if they, you know, if they both of the two of them fall in love? And especially, we spend a lot of time working on things like relocation. Is the family involved? That's often a common one. Yeah. Have you spoken to your family? You know, there's so many things that go into what we do that you sort of don't necessarily see behind the scenes.
Thanks for that. And this topic of passion for games and that thing you're saying about building trust and lasting relationships, that's great. You know, not everyone gets the job, right? So can you place them at other times in the future in building a long-term business? But I was also thinking about, especially at the leadership level, like, how important is it to be passionate about games, especially when you're hiring a leader, perhaps a game maker, so a game studio or a games publisher, even gaming tech, I guess. But yeah, how important is that? How much weight do you put on that?
Such a good question. Such a good question, and such a tricky question as well, because I'm sure we've all heard and seen examples of where, you know, games companies have hired non-games industry leaders and it's gone terribly, terribly badly. More often than not, due to cultural challenges of the non, you know, it's the sort of perception that the non-games folks don't get it, and the games folks are alienated by the non-games person that is coming in and, you know, stifling our creativity and setting all these deadlines and cutting all our costs and, you know, blah, 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 blah. I think there are many, many examples also where it has worked brilliantly, particularly, you know, where we spend a lot of time on this particular topic at True is, you know, the sort of the transmedia areas of games, you know, the gamification of non-game apps is another area, and then you know, bringing, let's say, more wider media talent into games, where, you know, it's fundamentally, in my view personally, is about the assessment process. It goes back to our sort of previous topic, which is, does the client really know how to assess cultural fit, and really know how to assess the outcomes they want to achieve on bringing in a sort of non-games talent into their business, into their studio, into their publisher, what have you? Because, of course, you have to deeply understand the implications of what that really means. And also that the candidate has to deeply understand the cultural nuances of coming into a games company where, let's be frank, a lot of people often only really care about making a great game because that's what they're passionate about and that's what they want to achieve. But actually there's a whole lot more of, you know, corporate challenges that go on behind the scenes that often the folks at the leadership level particularly try to shield the business from that. And sometimes I think personally that a sort of a culture of real sort of transparency and over communication around, you know, achieve what we have to do to achieve these business objectives. Particularly when someone is coming in from a non-games environment, is what will sort of create the difference and also stop the sort of potential alienation that happens in these sorts of circumstances.
Yeah, I really like that example, because whilst you were talking through all of that, I was just thinking back to when I've worked at places like EA and Epic Games and Space Ape Games, and I can visually come to mind people that have straddled, like, let's say, business and product incredibly well, and those that haven't. And the examples where that's not gone well, it creates like an us and them. It's like, okay, you know, this lead has come in and they're just trying to get the most time and money out of us. They don't really care if we create a critically acclaimed game or a beautiful piece of art or the stuff that is driving the motivation for a lot of the people there. But you also make the point, like, yes, people can come in from outside of games, but they really need to have a solid appreciation of what they're stepping into and strive to be intellectually curious enough to understand the culture. I don't know if I'm putting words in your mouth there, but that's
no, you're absolutely
what it seems
right.
Like
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I think it's particularly, you know, prevalent in searches when it's, you know, the perception is it can be someone that isn't from the games industry. So that might be the HR or people function. It might be the finance function. It might be the legal function. You know, you name it. And you know, I think back to being very lucky and running the group CFO search for Supercell, and you know, placed an incredible guy there called Gerard Griffin, who was the former, you know, group CFO of Zynga. And you know, why was he the perfect guy for the role is really, he is just as much of a gamer and a nerd and a great human as everyone else in that fantastic business. And you know, Ilk has done such an amazing job of building an incredible culture there. And he cares so deeply about leaders in his business coming in and not disturbing that. But also, you know, we've all probably read his blog posts over the years, and you know, one in particular last year talking about having to level up and having to change leadership and change the culture in his business. But one doesn't want to have to sort of, you know, strive too far away from your sort of, you know, your core fundamentals. And I think Jer has sort of, or did throughout the process, demonstrate that balance brilliantly, because not only is he an exceptional corporate professional, but he also fundamentally is a down-to-earth, hugely fun and funny, just human being in sort of his core principles. And so, I think it's just really aligning the values, I think, is so important. And you touched on another point, which is around, you know, product focus versus sort of corporate, you know, requirements, you know, operational efficiency, EBITDA, P&L management, general management, more, you know, more broadly. And it's such a big topic for us in what we do. And, you know, I place product leaders, I place, you know, COOs, I place, you know, finance leaders, I place CEOs, and you know, at the leadership level, it's the sort of the topic that always comes up is, how do we maintain our creative sort of focus as a games business, but also, you know, meet corporate objectives fundamentally. And of course, that corporate objectives varies dramatically from if you're a seed stage studio up to if you're a, you know, PLC. Of course, it's all nuanced, but the sort of the fundamental is the same, which is if you're an equity backed or a capital backed studio in some way, you are beholden to your shareholders. And as soon as you are beholden to your shareholders, it changes the, you know, the expectations and the requirement on the business in quite a dramatic way. And therefore, finding leaders who really get that is actually way more challenging than I think we often think, because especially in today's environment where fundraising and making games is so much more challenging. You know, being able to raise capital, you know, raising your next round of capital is largely determined by your ability to meet operational deadlines and sort of, you know, corporate deadlines more than it is often just having great art, as you say, or fantastic core game loop. Because if you can't get that game to market, even if it does have a fantastic game loop, you're not going to be successful. It's a tricky sort of creative balance to strike as people that care so deeply about making great product and making fantastic games for their eventual fans, as I guess they all hope.
Yeah, and I absolutely love it. Love to see it when leaders and leadership teams fully embrace that, the one team mentality. Like, they get their devs excited about looking at the P&L and the finances and the runway. And you're talking about EBITDA and that sort of thing. These shouldn't be separate discussions. I think ultimate transparency on how we're doing as a business should get everyone in that business excited. And if they're not excited, it's probably some poor storytelling or a bad timing on these sorts of things. Likewise, with pulling in all your operational and support teams, HR, finance, operations, etc., into getting really excited about product launches and that sort of thing. In fact, it's usually very, very easy to get them excited by the product side. New trailer or playtesting opportunities and things like that. In fact, there's usually a lot of work at games companies to pull in into the product. And then, the finances and that sort of thing is just kept away for the leadership team. It's like, no. Like, if you've hired a team of really smart devs, designers, product people, and just people in your company, they will also be really intellectually curious about every part of the business. And are we succeeding? And should we brace ourselves for impacts for something negative? Or if we keep pushing, will we achieve our goals as a business?
That's what
you're saying. Finding that in one person is actually so much harder than you'd expect. It sounds like
there's a really good sort of thing you just touched on there, I think, which is around the sort of culture of transparency and communication. But it's also it comes back to sort of aligning incentives as well. So, you know, if you have an amazing amazing finance leader, let's say, who is fantastic at telling the finance journey of the business. We often call it the equity story or the sort of the financial storytelling. You can so significantly influence sort of team behavior and cultural behavior in a business by also aligning incentives to those sorts of topics. So, of course, particularly in the growth ecosystem where almost every employee is incentivized by equity and by an option scheme, and seeing the company win, seeing the company transact, and then, you know, hopefully the bell rings or the business sells, and then you'll have a wonderful payday and you sail off and get a boat, whatever you want to go and do, and go on a nice holiday. the point to that is that, you know, when you are amazing at telling that story, both internally and externally, and actually more importantly, in my opinion, internally, you create a culture of behaviors where people are so aligned to the company's values and the company's objectives, where you have far, far superior staff retention. You have far, far superior just behaviors in general. That could be, it could be social. It can be you know, just team behaviors, working collaboratively on different projects. And we've sort of seen this time and time again where, you know, businesses have fantastic, you know, option schemes for their leaders and not great ones for their, you know, mid-management staff and IC staff and more junior staff. And then this goes back to the point of, sort of us and them, even sort of the point earlier around sort of non-industry talent, but it can come back to a culture that the leaders and them. Yeah, people that have been around the block and seen this as leaders really get this, and really know that you know, fostering that sort of culture of transparency and you know, we're all in it together is often a real sort of game changer, I would say. I'm using game changer again, apparently. It's my phrase.
Well, actually, I caught myself when you were talking, just thinking about puns earlier. You were talking about World of Warcraft, and I actually went, wow. I was like, oh my goodness. anyone that's made it this far into the episode has caught me out on that. But yeah, talking of that, thank you so much for all of these, like, demystifying executive search, talking about values that you look for in leaders consistently across games, and just what it's like to be in this world of exec search in the games industry. Thanks so much. We're getting towards the end of the episode, and so my closing question for everyone is, what's your favorite interview question?
Yeah, I wrote this down, Joe, so I'm gonna read it. That's okay, because I think
that's perfect.
Yeah, I know what'll happen, because otherwise I'll end up start mumbling and getting it wrong. So, but I think this is I would just sort of preface by saying, I wouldn't say there's sort of a favorite interview question per se, but it's really one of the things that we've spent a lot of time on this year is, you know, solving macro challenges through talent. And of course, the games industry is, you know, struggling. You know, we're seeing some huge wins in the industry and a few, you know, real flashes in the pan, but still a number of huge challenges, layoffs and redundancies and so on. And you know, I sort of reflect on that and think, how can I play a small part in finding great people to stop these things from happening again? And so I encourage clients to think about leaders in this context. And so I'll just read the question now, and hopefully it sort of characterizes what I'm saying. And so the question is, in today's climate where making games is getting harder and harder, funding and fundraising is getting harder and harder, and investors expect returns, how can you, as a leader, create an environment that enables creativity and great behaviors whilst also achieving great business outcomes?
I love it. Because that just kind of hits the nail on the head for everything we've just been talking about for nearly 30 minutes. And you've done that in one question.
I think so.
So, yeah. So just quickly, you used the phrase solving macro challenges through talent. I need to steal that, because that's ultimately what we're trying to do, right? Like, our existence is the world in the world is to make as much impact as possible through putting the right people together. But yeah, I love that question, because that's ultimately what a perfect games company is doing. They are fostering all the creativity and being an environment that everyone feels safe enough to do that and be innovative and create art, but also it's a company that can make money and survive and make more games and help people live their other dreams as well. So
yeah, absolutely, 100%. Yeah, look, you know, we all play our small part in this industry in our own little way, and you know, when you boil it down to everything, it's all about people. And, you know, everything is all about people, right? And games is all about how games make you feel. It's about the people that come together to make the games. It's about creating a legacy. It's about creating amazing environments for people to succeed and build what they want to build. And you know, I'm very lucky that I play a small, but I think in some cases a very palpable role in seeing, you know, my clients succeed and my you know, my candidates, fundamentally, a lot of the time, my friends succeed, which is the best part of what I do. So, it's a real privilege to be in this position.
Yeah, and it's the trickle down effect. You place one incredible leader in a company, they build out their own leadership team, which then trickles down. They could change their company culture for the better. They then ship incredible products. It's like when you look at those trickle-down achievements. I'd imagine that's incredibly satisfying.
It is. It's quite amazing. Often there's a perception, of course, as a an outsider, so to speak, as a consultant for a business rather than an employee, so to speak. You don't often see the outcomes in a tangible way to what you do. If you were, of course, maybe in some of your previous roles, Joe, where of course you were, bringing talent in, for Epic and so on. Yeah. I think providing you stay close to the people that you work with, you do actually really see the impact, because they call you and they tell you how it's going, and you catch mm-hmm. up with them and you genuinely hang out and you go on that journey with them. Because all we want to do is see our placements and our clients succeed. And so, yeah, we follow them. We play an agony aunt role in their ear whenever they need it, when things aren't going well, or when things are going right, of course, so we can celebrate successes. It's more often than not, it's hopefully that. So,
that's great. Well, hey, I think that's a lovely and very positive note to end on. So, Charlie, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I've really appreciated it. I'm glad it's finally happened.
And yeah, we did it. We got there.
Yeah. Made it through. And so, thanks so much. And hey, wishing you the very best of luck with everything at True. And I guess we'll be hanging out at Games Conference soon.